you know, really, in order for military base pay to go up and help you make more money, the only real, you know, kind of like path to victory on that is if the new Republican Senate and a divided or possibly Republican House puts forward in their next defense spending bills, like manual raises that are above the ECI. Like if ECI comes out for next year at 3.2%, somebody, you know, your congressman is going to have to write in there, like, let's give him a 5% raise. So maybe, you know, maybe you should write your congressman and say, like, hey, look, giving us ECI is actually, it's just helping us keep up with inflation. It's not an actual pay raise. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing. And most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Welcome back to the Service and Wealth podcast. I guess that's maybe more for me than for you in this case. You know, we did some batch recording since for the past couple weeks, been on the road, and rather than try to, you know, record an episode on my phone or in a small hotel room in Europe, you know, I before I left the house for those couple weeks, I did three podcasts so that we would be kind of racked and stacked and ready to roll and just have content coming out. Well, I could unplug for a little bit, and that was nice. So if you've been listening consistently week to week, I appreciate it. And, you know, I wasn't coming to you live, but I was putting in the work. And, you know, now that we're back and we're getting situated, we got to get back on the mic and back in the, you know, as Dre said, back in the lab with the pen and the pad, trying to get this label off. And so here we are. We're getting back in the swing of things. It's maybe a little rust to bust here, but, you know, looking forward to it. It's there's something that is really important, obviously, for me, and hopefully it's been really valuable for you as well. You know, I want to say thanks. One of our listeners out there, you know, he DM'd me and he was like, hey, look, I've been catching up and I really appreciate it, but I don't agree with everything you're saying. You know, I think there's other ways that work best and or better. And, you know, that's awesome feedback. And, you know, if you have that kind of feedback, I'd love to hear it. And I think what would make for a really fun episode is, you know, if one of you who's listening right now was really motivated, I'd love to, you know, there's an app called Riverside where you, so long as you each have Riverside, you can do, and I don't know what the max number of people, you know, or devices, but you can do simultaneous like podcast recording. So from anywhere in the world, right? So if you're out there in Oceanside, California, or San Diego, California, or Pensacola, Florida, wherever the case is, Okinawa, Kaneohe Bay, like anywhere out there, and you wanted to, you're up for it to like kind of do like a little discussion, debate, or like a Q&A, or even like a live, you know, kind of budget breakdown where you just kind of say like, hey, what should I do here and what should I do here? This is what I'm thinking about this. What do you think about that? And we could just talk through it and we could do a live, you know, podcast. Well, it wouldn't be live. We'd script it. So you wouldn't have to be nervous. I wouldn't have to be nervous. But we could record a podcast together and talk through some things. So just want to throw that out there. Anybody who's listening and is interested, you know, I challenge you to reach out and we'll set it up. And I think that'll be a really fun, you know, whether it's interview or debate, Q&A, whatever the fact is, we can make it whatever works. And that would be really cool. All right. So back to where we are today, and that is November 10th. Well, obviously I got to say happy birthday to all the Marines out there. Happy birthday, Marines. I don't know what year this is because like I'm out of the propaganda loop. I think it's like 248 or that's probably way off. I don't have that many fingers and toes to count. So I should just sit here and eat my crayons. Right. But It's, you know, a big day, a big celebration day for the Marine Corps, celebrating our birthday and our heritage. And, you know, part of that is also when we do celebrate that birthday, we get the Commandant's birthday message where he and the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, so our top officer, our top enlisted, they tell us about the year that's coming. Core history that we're about to make together. And, you know, it just so happens to coincide, obviously, with coming off, you know, like if you're a Marine, like the Marine Corps birthday, that was like the biggest headline this week, right? You're like, wait, something else go on? I'm not sure, I wasn't paying attention. To everybody else, your top headline was probably the presidential election, right? And so in the kind of like blending together the spirit of the Marine Corps birthday, where we get our birthday message and we look ahead in the future and we say, like, what is coming up next? What should we expect from Washington, D.C., from the Pentagon, from the world in terms of security and stuff like that? And this, you know, very historic election that we just witnessed and may or may not have participated in. I thought it would be really a good topic and a really timely topic for the show to kind of, you know, look back and see what kind of, if there were any sort of trends or patterns or history when Trump was president last time, or differences between Republican and Democratic administrations, and just kind of look into the future this next year and even like a full 4 years kind of as a trend, and really kind of see if we can't make any predictions about what to expect for our pocketbooks and for our home economics, you know, here in the military. In other words, over the next year, 1 to 4 years, like, what should we expect with things like our base pay, basic allowance for housing? We can kind of speculate about, like, prices and inflation, but that's pretty hard to do. You know, but we're also going to look at how the things that Trump is likely to push in terms of economic policy could affect your cost of living, your ability to be a homeowner, your ability to be a real estate investor, stock market investor, et cetera. And then we're going to kind of wrap up the show with just some sort of, like, I don't want to say predictions, right? Because I don't want you to hold me to it, but really kind of looking at, on the global scale, the way that, you know, the Trump presidency and his likely economic policies could have an impact on global security. In other words, like on our jobs and like where we go and what we do. And so we'll kind of break down today's episode in those three chunks. First, before we get started, two things. Obviously, one, I want to just promote the website, www.militarywealthcoach.com. If you go over there, what I really would love is if, you know, you're a regular listener and you haven't gone over there and you haven't signed up for, you know, it's above the cut line. It's like, it's the landing page, basically. It says free consultation, sign up, you know? And if you're out there listening and you're thinking to yourself, like, I kind of got this covered. I don't really have a lot of questions about my investments or savings plan or buying a house or becoming a real estate investor or syndications or, you know, taxes. Like, I don't have any questions about that. I'd still love it if you signed up for, you know, a free coaching session, and it would just be a time for us to, like, kind of go back and forth and just talk about things. And, you know, even if you're just telling me, like, how everything I'm saying is totally wrong, and the only reason why you listen is so you find, you know, things to laugh at. Like, I don't really care, but I'd love to hear from you guys as the listeners and the audience out there. And then also, you know, there are links to all of our socials out there, so you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and across the board. You know, now that we're kind of settled back into school and back from travel and stuff, you should sign up for the free coaching session, and then you should coach me on how to, like, do social media and, you know, create content every day, like 1 to 3 posts every day, like Reels, TikToks. Should I be on Snapchat? Like, you know, this is the kind of feedback that I need, right? So how you want to get the information, and then I need to get my backside in gear and start producing that content, right? And then the second thing, obviously, before we get started is to just, again, highlight that, you know, nothing I say should be misconstrued as, like, telling you to do something, right? It's not legal, tax, or investment advice, per se. It's, you know, education, trying to help you increase your financial IQ, and just sharing, like, tips and facts and strategies, and not just winning strategies, but losing strategies. You know, I talk all the time about some of the big mistakes that I've made with stock market and crypto investing and how I've learned from that. And so those are things too that come across as like tips and tactics and strategies that you can use in your own investing life. If after getting that information and thinking about it, you still, you know, need help, like you can talk to me as a coach, or you can go hire a financial advisor or other professional. It's probably always wise once you start becoming an investor and a real estate investor and property manager to have like a tax advisor or a tax accountant. But as always, you know, do your own research, make your own decisions, and then accept the consequences. All right, so here we go. So let's just start first and foremost looking at, you know, Trump will be the president inaugurated in January. You know, I think they certify the results January 6th in Congress, and then he's inaugurated 2 weeks later, like January 20th, right? So in reality, we got about 2 months until he, and then it's definitely a Republican Senate, I think. And I think, you know, I should be on my headlines, right? It's the afternoon over here in England, so I've got no excuse for not keeping up on headlines and vote counts, but at the very least, I think the House of Representatives is going to be essentially like a draw, right? So Trump's going to have legislative support for the things that he wants to push forward. And, you know, he's kind of known as business-friendly and oversees like business-friendly economic policies and things that are good for lower taxes, et cetera. And that's a big reason why a lot of people voted for him. You know, if you watched any of the exit polls or like the interviews with voters in North Carolina and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan, all those swing states, I think like just like straw polling, like 80% of them said the number one issue was the economy. And, you know, it's kind of funny because when you look at the data, you know, Jerome Powell's been the Fed chair for like almost a decade. He helped to bring inflation down by manipulating interest rates. Maybe, right? Like it's not 100% correlated there. Job growth has been pretty good. You know, one of the things that's really important to recognize is that there's like a minimum threshold of job creation just to manage the turnover. And that happens to be like about 125, 130 up to 150,000 jobs every month have to be created just so that we like have a net zero. And, you know, if you think we have like immigration and new people who are turning 18 and like going off to get new jobs, you need more than that. And if you look at 2024, up until August, the job growth was pretty solid. But then, you know, August and October, job growth has been really, really poor, you know, in the U.S. So, you know, for whatever reason, like from wherever you stand, whatever corner of the country you're in and your background and your neighbors and your family and your political affiliations, like, you know, you can twist it as being good or bad or whatever. But, and so, you know, it's hard to really say what's the truth. Like, is the truth that the economy's bad? Is it good? I don't know. All we know is people are kind of unhappy. And so there's a lot of focus on it. And the thing about being in the military is, on the one hand, so long as you are, you know, you have the right attitude, you know, and that's coming from somebody who had a bad attitude for like 2/3 of my time in, where I was like, nope, not for me. This sucks. I should get paid more. I should have more, you know, autonomy. I should be treated like, you know, like all the typical gripes. But the fact of the matter was, is that it is what you make it, right? And if you have a crap attitude, you're going to be unhappy, but you're still going to be at work and you're still going to be in the military. So you might as well like have a more positive attitude. and look at the bright side of things. And one of the things is, you know, whether you're in for 4 or 40, so long as you do your job and don't get in trouble, you've got guaranteed work and guaranteed income. So, like, you don't have to stress so much about what's the economy doing, churning out jobs or not, wages, are they growing or not. If you're going to separate, if it's time to get out, again, after 4 or 14 or 20 or 40, you know, now that starts to loom large, and you want to see how the greater economy is doing with producing jobs. But yeah, also having served in the military, you have a little bit of an inside track into government contracting jobs, government service, like GS, civilian jobs. You might, you know, if it's bad, if the economy's bad, you know, go keep working for the government, just like out of uniform. And so you really have like a lot of advantages in terms of job stability and income stability being in the military. But of course, you're still worried, or at least you're still paying attention, you know, at the end of the day to what's your paycheck, how much are you actually getting. And so one of the things that I thought would, you know, be important just as far as how it relates to each and every one of us in uniform is, do we expect to get more money or less money in a Trump administration compared to another, you know, if there are 4 more years of Biden or Harris or, you know, Democratic or whatever. And so, you know, did some homework and looked at things. And one of the big changes, you know, in terms of the way that we are compensated in the military is, you know, back in the National Defense Authorization Act, it's a, you know, they don't come out every year. They tend to come out every like 3 or 4 years. Essentially, like each time there's a new president, they kind of have to do this like national defense strategy, national military strategy, National Defense Authorization Act, like all these like, hey, under this presidency, like these are the grand strategy and global goals that we have. And it trickles all the way down in the budget. And so it used to be wildly fluctuating. You know, if you look back into the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, like President Lyndon Johnson early on in the Vietnam War, 1965, like he signed into law that enlisted got 11% pay raise and officers got a 6% pay raise, you know. And then in the Nixon years, they were getting 6 to a 12%. President Ford came in, he was doing 3 to 5%. Then President Carter came in and he was doing 6 to 11%. And then Reagan in his first year, you know, 14%. But then in 1986, with the National Defense Authorization Act, which was a huge, you know, if you've gone through like your schools, because you're a senior staff NCO or, you know, at least like an 03 officer or higher, you know, like there was a major change under that and the way we run our military. And included in that was that it's now pay raises had to be tied, and they've, for like 40 years now, they've been tied to the employment cost index. And that's something that is not managed by the DOD. That's managed by the OMB. And so basically the federal government says like, hey, here's the actual amount that the cost of having an employee went up. And so that depends a lot on things like inflation. And when there's high inflation, like there was, 21, 22, 23, 24, we saw 3 to 6% base pay raises. If you go back to the early 2000s under President Obama, you know, it was a 1.4% increase in 2011, 1.6% in 2012, 1.7% in 2013, 1.0% in 2014, 1.0% in 2015, 1.3% in 2016. And that had a lot to do with, one, after the Great Recession, the government was trying to like save money and cut the budget so we could like recover our economy as a nation. And then also like it was really low inflation, you know. And so when we look ahead, we say like, oh, Trump's like military friendly, Republicans love the military. But the laws say that you've got to increase base pay according to the ECI. And the ECI is pretty closely tied to inflation. So it's kind of like a weird rock in the hard place, right? Like you want to get more money, you want your base pay to go up. But in order to get like a 4, 5, 6% boost in your base pay, the only way that can happen is if inflation goes back up, right? Inflation's down right now around, what, 3.3%. The only way you're going to get 5, 6% pay raise in base pay is if inflation goes back up to 6, 7%, right? And so what are you going to, you know, President Trump's not going to save you. You know, it didn't, it actually, it may not matter who would have been president because it's the ECI that determines. Now, there's a little asterisk you had to put in there because over the past couple of years, the Congress put forward in their budget pay raises for military that were higher than the ECI. Because they said, okay, if inflation's been 5% and we just give you a 5% pay raise from the ECI, that's not actually a pay raise. It's just canceling out inflation. And so they've put forward like 6.5 or 7% to try to actually give you an actual pay raise, but it never made it into law, right? So we're still kind of just like following the ECI. So if you're really desperate to stay in the military, but you need more money and you're not willing, or you already have like cut your expenses and put yourself on a budget, please don't hope for inflation, right? Like that's not good for anybody. If you get $105 instead of $100, you might feel $5 richer, but if everything costs, you know, $105 instead of $100, you're just where you were. So, you know, really, in order for military base pay to go up and help you make more money, the only real, you know, kind of like path to victory on that is if the new Republican Senate and a divided or possibly Republican House puts forward in their next defense spending bills like manual raises that are above the ECI. Like if ECI comes out for next year at 3.2%, somebody, you know, your congressman is going to have to write in there, like, let's give him a 5% raise. So maybe, you know, maybe you should write your congressman and say like, hey, look, giving us ECI is actually, it's just helping us keep up with inflation. It's not an actual pay raise. And we get that because we've been listening to the military wealth coach and he's been explaining that all that's doing is keeping up with inflation. Sometimes not even, because ECI doesn't include things like, you know, fuel and utilities and things like that. It's just core cost of living, core inflation. So maybe, you know, maybe send a letter off to your congressperson and say like, hey, look, we deserve actual raises. ECI plus 2% would be nice. ECI plus 3% would be nice. And maybe it'll happen. And of course, you know, if you're E5 and below and you're single, you're probably in the barracks, which, sure, you're not getting BAH, but as housing costs skyrocket, guess what you're not paying? You're not paying housing costs. You're not paying rent. You're not paying a mortgage. You're not paying utilities. You probably got your mobile plan, and like that's about it. And so there's a lot of insulation there that you don't have to worry about. But if you're E5 or below and you have a family, or you're at a duty station where there's not enough billeting because you're at like a smaller installation and you've been approved to go out in town, or you're E6 and up all other ranks and you're getting basic allowance for housing, BAH, that's another way that you can get more money. Obviously, like you got those two levers, basically, base pay and BAH or other entitlements. And one of the things that happened is the BAH actually only started in 1998. So if you're listening and you've been in for like 30 years, then you know like you used to get BAQ and VHA. You lived through the years when the DOD tried to make you cost share your housing to cut back on BAH. But since 1998, we've been under BAH, and BAH has consistently gone up pretty well, right? And that's because it's based on surveys. And it's not like you have to fill out, go on like SurveyMonkey and be like, my landlord raised my rent $100. It's $1,200, not $1,100. And then like, you know, the Secretary Austin is in the Pentagon. He's like, oh, yes, I see. It's gone up, you know, 9%. Let's give everybody a 9% raise in BAH. That's not how it works. People in the DOD and in local, you know, probably mostly contractors, right? Because like, you wouldn't want to rely on like a team of Marines, you know, in Jacksonville, North Carolina, to like start crunching numbers and doing math to be like, yes, there's been a 4.5% increase in housing costs for families of four. You know, like that's way too complex, right? Like we can't even, we don't even know how many bedrooms are in our house. So they, you know, they have people out there who are like doing the data crunching, and they try to make sure that you are compensated for that change in cost of living. And so if we look back, you know, 2008, 2009, that was sort of like the end of the housing bubble and the Great Recession was just coming. And so the BAH increased 7.3% and 6.9% in those 2 years. But those were passed in 2007, 2008, right? Before the crisis. Then during the crisis, right? Again, BAH was adjusting for changes in housing costs. It went down to 1.1%, 2%, 2.5%. In 2018, it only went up 0.7% because of the, you know, in that time, like housing costs went way down, cost of living went way down because of the housing bubble and the Great Recession. And then obviously like during the COVID crush and like since COVID with the 0% interest rates that were in place through 2022, the housing market exploded, cost of living went up, cost of rent, mortgages, all that stuff went up. And so, you know, in 2022, you got a 5.1% increase. In 2023, it was a 12.1% increase in BAH. And then in 2024, I believe it was a 5.5% increase again, right? So, you know, again, you're thinking like, oh, raise my BAH, like help me get more money. Come on, you know, Trump, come on, Republican, whoever. But these things... Now, there's no index, like it's not tied to the ECI, but it is tied to like those local surveys. In order to get more BAH, you have to have the cost of living going up, right? And it's just meant to like basically offset it. So again, this is not, it's not a great way to try to get more money, because the only way to do that is, let's just say, you know, you're getting $1,500 a month in BAH and in your local area, the cost of living goes up 10%. And that's, it's the same nationwide. And so, you know, Congress writes into the defense spending bill, we're going to raise BAH by 10%. So next year, you're going to get it $1,650. Well, if your actual rent went up 10%, you're still in net zero, right? So what you have to do is you kind of have to always live below your BAH, and you should either be trying to become a homeowner, because once you get a mortgage, that payment's going to be locked in and fixed, right? So if you know, buy a $130,000 house in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and your mortgage payment is $900 a month and your BAH entitlement is $1,300, 2, 3, 4 years from now, 6 years, if you know, if you can like homestead and like your job is closely tied to the insulation, you're going to live in that house for like 5 or 6 years, and you're going to only do a PCA instead of a PCS move. Well, if that BAH keeps going up 5 or 10% per year, $100, $100, $100, and in 5 or 6 years, you might be getting $2,000 BAH. And obviously, you're going to get promoted. So even more, you might be getting $2,500 BAH, but that mortgage is still frozen back at $900, right? And that's the real magic about buying a home with a 30-year mortgage, is that the payment every single year that you own that home and have that mortgage, as a percentage of your income and your money, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller, because you have the fixed principal and interest payments based on that first year. And if you're not going to buy a house and you're not going to take advantage of that way to kind of control your housing costs and your budget, if you move to a new town and you're going to rent, negotiate with your landlord for like a 3-year lease. You've always got the Service Members Civil Relief Act of, was it 2006 or 2003? 2006, I think that's right. In which you can show your landlord a copy of orders and they have to let you out of your lease with no penalty, right? So getting yourself locked into a 3-year lease at a fixed monthly rent, that means in year 2 or 3, your rent's not going to go up, but your BAH should go up, right? So you can't just sit around and passively wait for base pay to go up by the employment cost index or BAH to go up by some housing survey that the DOD does. You've got to take control of it yourself. You got to put yourself on a budget, not spend all your money. You should ideally be purchasing homes is you each time you go to a duty station, you take advantage of that VA loan and lock yourself in at a fixed housing cost. So then each year when your BAH goes up, you just have extra cash in your pocket. All right. So, to conclude that this first segment, all that's to say is it doesn't really matter who's in the White House, because from the sense of they're not going to automatically increase your military pay. Unless you write, everyone in uniform writes all their congresspeople and says, we deserve to be paid more, because just increasing our base pay with inflation is actually a net zero. So we need a nice pay bump. And then they can override the ECI. But that's pretty much it. And obviously, then you have to start caring about other things. And so, in this second segment, what I want to talk about is the likely economic policies of a Trump administration with Republican Congress vis-a-vis the stock market, you being an investor, your retirement savings in the TSP, and more importantly, or more specifically, or more, relevant to Trump and his policies that we saw him put in place from 2016 to 2020. And what he said then and what he said in 2020 when he was campaigning and trying to predict what he's likely to do is really super friendly to real estate investors. Why? Because he's a real estate investor. So what are some of the things he did back when he was president? So 2017, the Trump Tax and Jobs Act, Tax Cuts and Job Act, is that what it was called? 7 years ago, right? Give me a break. in there, he had added in there what was called accelerated depreciation. All right. So normally if you buy a house and you live in your own house, all you do, you just live in the house, you pay your mortgage. When you file your taxes each year, you can deduct property taxes and you can deduct mortgage interest. And that's about it. When you own a rental property, you can deduct property taxes, you can deduct your mortgage interest, you can deduct closing costs, you can deduct points that you paid on a loan in order to lower the interest rate, you can deduct any costs that are associated with cleaning it, with repairing it, you can deduct any costs that are related to managing it, right? So I manage our real estate properties and I need a new computer, and that computer is really important because that's how I manage our communication with our tenants. That's how I manage our contractors and our accounts and do all of our banking and budgeting and pricing and advertising and all that stuff, right? And so that computer is a tax write-off, it's a purchase for the business, right? So all those things go into saying, when you're a real estate investor, you have these additional options. And then the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act brought accelerated depreciation in. Now, normally, the IRS thinks your house is going to wear out in 30 years. So each year you get to take what amounts to about 4%, a little bit less than 4% of the value of your house, and you can deduct it as depreciation. So, let's say you've got a $400,000 house. This is going to be pretty close to accurate. $400,000 house that you buy in 2020 and you start renting it out. Each year you could take about $14,000 of depreciation and say okay, I'm going to take this and it's going to be a tax deduction, help me save on my taxes. Well, you can also break it out and you can say, how much is the house? The house is worth $250,000. The land's worth $50,000. And then there's $100,000 of appliances and window coverings and doors and stuff that actually wears out faster than 30 years. And all that other stuff, you used to be able to depreciate over a 5 or a 15-year period. Well, if you buy a $400,000 house and you can break it out and you can depreciate that $100,000 worth of appliances and blinds and windows and doors faster, now you can, maybe be saving $20,000 a year off your taxes. Under Trump, the accelerated depreciation let you take all of it, right? So you could take $100,000 as a tax deduction in that year. And why does that can't really matter? Well, let's say you invested in, you know, Dogecoin or Shiba, and you made a lot of money. You know, let's say you bought like $1,000 worth, and it went up, and now you sold it for $100,000. You had or $101,000, so you have $100,000 capital gain. Well, you could offset it with that depreciation on your real estate investment. Tell the IRS, hey, look, I had $100,000 loss from depreciation, and I had $100,000 gain from my crypto. That balances out to zero, and now I owe zero taxes, you know, on that capital gains income. And that's been phasing out. So that 100%, it went down to, 80% was in, 80% was 23. Last year, or this year, 60%. Next year, only 40%. In 2026, 20%. And then in 2027, it's supposed to go back to the way it used to be, right? Which means instead of being able to deduct $100,000, you might only be able to deduct like $5,000 or $6,000. Well, Trump, you know, Trump campaigned and said, like, I think that should be permanent. I think people should get to deduct, you know, take bonus depreciation. And, you know, what that allows you to do is avoid these major tax hits if you've got a good investment, right? And if you made a good investment, you know, I personally believe, like, you're entitled to that gain. You shouldn't have to give 15 or 20% of it to the federal government because they didn't do anything, right? Like that was your investment. It's not like, you know, paying income tax on your wages because, you know, thanks to the government, like they give you the job and they provide you all the support and the healthcare and the roads and the buildings and all that stuff. You know, if you're just at the casino with your investments. So that's something to look out for, you know, and to be listening to. And then there's a couple other things that are really good. So there's a thing called a 1031B exchange. And what that says is that if you buy a rental real estate property and then you hold it for a while and you sell it, you owe capital gains tax, right? So you bought that $400,000 house when you PCS to... Where are you going to buy a $400,000 house in the military? Let's say to Quantico, like 5 years ago, you know, to Quantico, Virginia, or Virginia Beach, Fort Meade, somewhere in that like Northern Virginia National Capital Region, not in the city, but like out in the county, and you picked up like a $400,000 average three-bed house, and now it's worth $600,000. Well, the IRS is going to want to tax you on $200,000 of that if you've been renting it out. A 1031B exchange allows you to take your profits and instead buy more rental real estate and not owe any taxes. And so long as you keep doing that kind of flipping, you'll never have to pay taxes, right? So like, let's say you still owe $300,000 on that house, sell it for $600. The IRS is going to see, oh, you have a $300,000 capital gain. It's a long-term capital gain, but it's still going to add to your income. So it's going to increase your tax rate on your base pay from like 12 or 22% up into like the 24 or 32% tax bracket. And then they're going to tax that $300,000 if you're single at like 15%, and if you're married at like 10%. I think that's right. And then, you know, so like you're giving up $30,000 to $45,000 in taxes on it. Now you've only got like $250,000 in profit. But if you do a 1031 exchange and take that $300,000 profit and go buy another piece of real estate that you plan to rent out to somebody, well, now you've got all that cash. And maybe you can buy, you know, like a $1.2 million beachfront house. You can upgrade. And you can just keep doing that. And the Biden administration had said that they were going to eliminate that. And the Trump administration is obviously a big fan, right? So you have another, and I'm not saying this to like, vilify one party or one person or one administration, whatever your political views are, it's okay. I don't care, right? Like I only care about my family and about you. It's the community and what's best for you. And I'm just saying like, you're probably going to have four more years of really friendly laws, tax laws and legislation in this country that allow you to make big time profits in real estate investment. And you've got the VA loan, in your back pocket, you know, as a service member. So you should be using that like every year if you can, or at least every other year, and then taking advantage of all these like tax benefits of being a real estate investor. And, you know, one of the things also is the Biden administration said they were going to get rid of the step up in basis. Now, what is a step up in basis? What that means is that when you die right now under current IRS rules, let's say you did these 1031 exchanges, you bought a $400,000 house, owned it for 5 years, then you flipped it into a $1.2 million house, owned that for 5 years, then you flip it into a $3 million house, owned it for 5 years, keep going down the line. And in 30 years, you know, you're, no, let's just say in like 25 years, right? You're like 55 years old. You own a $10 million apartment complex. It's cash flowing $10,000 a month for you. And you're like, I'm out. I'm retiring off this building. This is awesome. It keeps growing in value. It's worth like $20 million when you're 70 and, you know, you die because you're into motocross racing as a 70-year-old and, you know, you just jump off the Grand Canyon, like whatever. But you're dead. $20 million. Well, the IRS is going to look at it. And if you were alive and you sold it for $20 million, they're not going to look at how much you bought that for. They're going to go all the way back. And they're going to say, wow, you've got, because you did 1031 exchanges all the way throughout your life, you've got $19.6 million worth of capital gains through your real estate investing. And we're going to tax it. And we're going to take like $3, $4 million from you, right? Like they're going to crush you. But if you've just been living off the income, like that real estate was your income plan, and then you die, and that $20 million house, apartment complex, passes on to your next of kin, because you died, the IRS does a step up in basis, which they're going to say, they're like, oh, actually, your 45-year-old daughter, gets that $20 million apartment complex. They're going to say her actual starting cost was $20 million because that's when she received it from you. And then she can go and sell it for $20 million. And they're going to say, oh, zero profit, right? You can create intergenerational, life-changing, family, legacy-establishing wealth through this strategy. And the Biden administration said that they were going to get rid of that, right? They were going to get rid of the step-up in basis because too many families, you know, of the 23.1 million millionaires in America, 19 million of them, like over 80%, became millionaires through real estate investing and doing things like this. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for you. And so they were able to do it because they had the step up in basis and they had the 1031B exchange, things like that. So you should be getting in real estate investing and then you should be taking advantage of these rules that are going to be in place for at least the next 4 years and may get extended farther out under the Trump administration that are friendly to real estate investing. All right, so where are we? We're at the done with the second segment. The first segment, we said, hey, look, don't plan on like more base pay, more BAH. It's too tied and regulated to like inflation and interest rates and all that stuff. And then in the second segment, we really just kind of highlighted how Trump being investor-friendly, real estate-friendly, and having a Republican Congress is going to allow some of those tax advantages and loopholes to continue. And when you have the VA loan for potentially zero down or at least 5 or 10% down entry into rent real estate that you can turn into rental properties and then over a multi-year, multi-decade strategy, turn it into millions of dollars of wealth, take advantage of it, right? Now, the last segment, it's a bit dry, so I'm just going to keep it very short. And this is like what to expect as we look out ahead for the next 1 to 4 years in terms of the bigger world and the bigger economy and our jobs in the military. Now, one of the things, the reason why I want to talk about this is because, you know, we, in history, right, 1945, Second World War ends. Soviet Union's like, hey, we're communists. We're going to take over the eastern half of Europe. America and Britain are like, well, we're going to take over the western half and we're going to be liberal democracies. And it started the Cold War, this ideological war. The nuclear arms race started. And over the next 46 years, the U.S. and the West and the Soviet Union never got into a direct war. Part of it was the nuclear deterrence, right? If everybody's going to die, it's called mutually assured destruction. Like, nobody wants that, right? Like, everybody loses. And guess what? That still exists today because the U.S. and Russia still have lots of nukes. So it's unlikely to escalate. But the U.S.'s strategy was to use their economy to bleed the Soviet Union dry. That's what the Cold War was. We forced them to spend more money than they had, and we bankrupted their economy. And eventually they collapsed from the inside. That was kind of what Trump was doing, right? From 91 until 2016, whether it was a Republican or Democratic president, from the first Bush through Clinton, through the second Bush, through Obama, all of them, they all followed the same mold, which was this, like, sort of like hyper-aggressive and we'll just leave it at that, like foreign policy, right? Like little wars, backing wars with like lethal aid and weapons and shooting missiles at people. And, you know, Trump kind of came in and he's like, look, I got a different idea. I'm going to go back to this thing that worked back in the 20th century, which was like, we're going to use economic sanctions, tariffs, things like that to cripple Iran's economy, to cripple China's economy, to cripple Russia's economy, to cripple North Korea's economy and slow them down. And we're not going to shoot missiles at them. We don't want them to shoot at us. Like, we're not going to do that. And in the long run, that will bring them to the negotiating table and bring them to their knees. Like, it worked before. We just have to be patient. And that was his foreign policy, right? And then we kind of switched back under Biden, and it was like, let's feed the war machine over there in Ukraine and in Palestine and Israel and stuff like that. And so I think what we can expect is that Trump's going to come back and he's going to switch back over to using economic tools and soft power. That's what we call soft power, economic tools, stuff like that, to put these tariffs in place. And what I keep seeing in the headlines, people are like, these tariffs are going to be massively destructive for our economy. They're going to drive prices through the roof, et cetera, et cetera. And that could be true. But the other half of Trump's economic policy is to bring back to America energy production and manufacturing processes. And that's really what we depend on countries like Russia, the Middle East, and China for, our energy and manufacturing, right? So, like, if you start to produce enough, and the thing that happened, we all have to, these are just facts, history tells us the truth. By 2020, at the end of the first Trump administration, we were energy independent. We were a net exporter of energy because of the production that we did here, whether it was drilling or other types of energy production, coal, et cetera. We made enough energy at home that not only could we supply all our own needs, but we could export it. And it's not the case anymore. We're back to being an importer. And so when Trump talks about putting tariffs on these things and people say, oh, that's going to drive up the cost, it's only true if we also don't bring these things back to America. So if he makes us energy independent again, then the tariffs don't matter to our inflation and prices at home. They just make it harder for China and Russia and Saudi Arabia to sell energy, to sell raw materials, to sell manufactured goods, because it's more expensive than the stuff that we can get at home. And so we as consumers, you know, inflation, we've said inflation will always be around. Inflation has been averaged 3.1% since 1914. So you know, we got 100 and maybe in 1912, right? Because I think 113 years, it's averaged 3.1%. That's the little heuristic I try to remember with the ones and the threes. But it's always going to be there, right? So it's not like we're going to 0% inflation. No, we don't really, and that's because of federal law. Like, let's not get distracted by that. But the point is, the Trump tariffs might, and the people who criticize it, they might make you think that it's going to lead to inflation, it's going to be bad for the American economy, but that's only true if that was the only thing that was going to happen. If it's paired with more domestic production of energy, of raw materials, more mining, you know, et cetera, then those will cancel out and things should be very stable. Now, the other thing is, you know, Dave Chappelle was like, I don't know when he recorded this, but he was like, man, Trump's talking about bringing back like all this manufacturing, like from China. He's like, I don't want to pay $10,000 for an iPhone. I'm already bled dry paying $1,000. All right. We have to be really honest here. When we're talking about national security for this country, you know, in the Internet of Things, in which everything we have has silicone in it, has a chip, that, and they are collecting, you know, if you're not aware, if you have Alexa in your home, Alexa is not just listening to you. Alexa puts a timestamp and a geolocation tag on everything you say. So if you are in the living room at 7:30 p.m. talking about popcorn, Alexa is feeding that back into Meta, into Google, and then those things are coming out with ads on your Instagram feed right around 7:30, showing you people eating snacks and popcorn. Or on your Spotify, your ad break at 7:20 is talking about Diet Coke and popcorn and M&Ms, right? Like, it's all connected. And if they can do that, well, what other data are they collecting and how are they using it? And if all of our smart devices are assembled in China, if our chips are coming from anything that's remotely controlled or connected to China, there's a serious national security interest right there. And so I think what we have to look at is probably the biggest challenge to our economy and our commitment to globalization, world trade, open borders, and all that kind of stuff is how do we secure our supply chains and our value chains and our Internet of Things and all these chips and computers and smartphones and all that? How do we bring it back home? You know, which is the Biden administration is supporting that hugely. I forget the name of the bill that they put in, but like they're building this massive campus down by Dallas to start producing chips. You know, their Texas is incentivizing. So like Trump and Biden were very similar on that. And you have to imagine that a Democratic president would be as well, right? If they were elected instead of Trump, that we would continue to do that. And well, how do we make sure that we don't have iPhones that then cost like $7,000 or $10,000, you know, or $3,000, even $2,000 for an iPhone is like kind of ridiculous. You're going to see subsidies, right? The government's going to have to subsidize it. And so that you can still get an iPhone for $1,000, even though it now says like designed in Cupertino, but assembled in Dallas, Texas, instead of assembled in China. Because it would be suicide economically and politically to let an iPhone become $5,000 or $3,000 just to bring production back here. But it's kind of a national security problem that we have to bring that stuff back. So a lot of people can say it's, you know, nationalism and it's old fogyism and it's, you know, xenophobia or paranoia and like all these negative things. But if you really look at it from the lens of what we are in the military, which is, you know, we're the world global police, right? And we're also defending this nation, is like, how many of you want to go to war so that that Apple can continue to get like cheap chips for their iPhones, right? Like, it's kind of dumb. So I think that's a big predictor, and where you'll have to watch out for that is obviously inflation, but also how that affects the budget, you know, and taxes. And right now, I think it's going to be a trade-off that you're not going to win both ways. You're not going to get your cake and eat it too. You know, prices will continue to go up as we secure our value chain and our supply chain and our products that we want and bring them back on shore. And then the subsidies that will have to go into kind of keeping those prices down and to bringing those production, you know, chains back to the United States, it's going to be really hard to cut taxes, you know? So in the grand scheme of things, you know, Americans don't pay a lot of tax. We in the military, because 30 to 40% of our income is BAH and it's not taxable, we're already paying a much lower tax than we should for our income. And so even if we don't get a tax cut, you know, it doesn't go from 14% down to 12% or 22% down to 21%. If it doesn't happen and save you $2,000 that way, you know, tough cookies, right? Like, you're still going to be able to get a $1,000 iPhone. And you're going to have to worry less about having to go to war over who has the best, you know, microprocessors and chips. So I think it's really important to just kind of like cut through, you know, as we kind of look at the next 4 years in economics and global security and national security and like what we do. It's just important to realize that like it's a really difficult problem and it's not as simple to understand as like the sound bites that you get on whether it's CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, I don't know what else. There's other you know, who knows? Everybody's got an opinion, but they're all just snippets. It's never the full picture. You know, maybe we'll come back and we'll do some blog posts on this kind of stuff. It's a bit chewy, but it's worth understanding. I'd love to get your feedback. You know, obviously you can DM me through social media. You can email me directly at it's coach@military-wealth.com. That's coach@military-wealth.com. Should I have made that easier? I don't know. Too late, right? No take backs. You know, and let me know if you want to hear more about that stuff and like really kind of like breaking down the economics of things and how it relates to national security. We can, but I feel like that's a pretty small slice of the audience. And we probably need to get back to talking about some simple things like maybe next week, like what stocks and are set to go to the moon, take a moonshot under the Trump administration. Like if Elon Musk is like the new national, I don't know, czar on the internet or something like that, like where should I invest my money? Should I buy Tesla stock? Still probably not. sorry. I have a former student out there who loves Tesla, and I tried to tell him one time that when Tesla's a junk bond rated company, like its stock is probably not going up anytime soon, but he really liked them. Anyway, all right, that's it. That's more than enough time for this week. I really appreciate you guys for tuning in. It's good to be back. Good to be back on the channel. For all the Marines out there, hey, happy birthday, Marines Semper Fi. I miss y'all. I love y'all. And I hope you have a great time. And then, you know, also tomorrow or today, if you're listening to it, November 11th, that's Armistice Day / Veterans Day / Remembrance Day. And so over here in the UK, it's Remembrance Day, which is kind of like our Memorial Day. So it's a real important couple days here where I get to celebrate the Marine Corps birthday with all my friends from around the world and then take a moment to thank and remember and to miss the ones who didn't come home. So that's it for our show this week. Really appreciate you guys, every single one of you for listening. And I do hope to hear from you, whether it's DM or email. And if you're one of my former students or a colleague, you know, fellow Marine, naval officer, friend who's listening, you probably have my phone number. So shoot me a text. All right. Be safe this weekend. If, you're going out doing any partying for the Marine Corps birthday ball or for any reason. And until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.